Believe it or not, the Greeks and the Germans are alike in many ways. They maintain strong family ties, keep old traditions going. They have respect for their elders, for each other, and for their families. They are both proud, hard-working, thrifty peoples who enjoy good music combined with fine food and drink. And so it is that the two largest ethnic groups in the Ann Arbor area have developed celebrations and maintained traditions to keep their heritages alive. The Germans are the larger and the older of the two communities, and we'll speak about them first. I asked Professor Frederick Warr, born in Ann Arbor in 1889, and a professor in the German department at the University of Michigan for many years, to recount some of the Germans' earliest history.
Why, the first German on record that I have read about was a man named Conrad Bisinger, who was wandering, investigating, pioneering through the West, finding a place he wanted to live. And he came through what was to become Ann Arbor and found a few cottages or log cabins here about 1820, the latter part of the 20s, about 27, 8, maybe it's earlier than that. But the settlement had already started. But he didn't like it very well, and he made up his mind he might buy land here and went away again, went south. Later on, he came back and did buy land and settled here. To my knowledge, from what I've read, he was the first German to come here, but he was followed in the early 30s by the Mann family, Emanuel Mann, and the Almendingers. And they met up with various people coming west. They were all seeking new homes and finally settled here. They, of course, later brought their families with them or sent for their families. I think in one case, part of the family did come. And they bought up land, whatever they could buy, and they immediately cleared the territory and cleared the land and started in farming, built a log cabin or a house of some sort, if their family came with them, and laid claim to their land and started in with farming. The few who had some chance of other forms of work, of course, stayed nearer the town. As time went on, these splendid farms out in Sio, Lodi, and Freedom, and so on and so forth, largely German, of German families, the next generation and its following generations, younger sons particularly, or daughters, came into town and began to work in town. That's readily understandable.
I said at one time, I guess the Germans owned half of Main Street.
Well, let me tell you, they came into town. One of the first big influences was the church, the German church, the Lutheran church. And they called the Almendingers and the Manns and so on, got in touch with the institution, the evangelical form of the Lutheran church in Basel. And they sent a man over by the name of Schmidt. And he became known as Pastor Schmidt. And he not only then started a church here out where the present-day Bethlehem Cemetery is on Jackson Ave.
Yes, there's a historical marker out there that commemorates.
There must be, yeah. And that was the first church, and of course, you can see it was outside of town. It wasn't in the Ann Arbor proper. It was out, well, that was, in my boyhood, it was quite a distance out to the Bethlehem Cemetery. Well, that, of course, was the Germans, those early Germans, wanted to center their activities around a church, and the Lutheran church was something of a home, shall I say, where they could all gather and meet and discuss things and so on. It was a center place.
The early German population was almost entirely from Württemberg. They were Schwabians and spoke the Schwabian dialect. They were good businessmen, and before long owned many businesses on Main Street. They formed a club where they could socialize, known as the Schwabenverein, which still exists today. I spoke with George Sauter, the current president of the Schwabenverein, with Albert Dukek, president of the German Park Recreation Club, and Hans Rauer, head of the local chapter of the Greater Beneficial Union. Albert Dukek, a Schwabenverein member since 1923, explained how the German park was acquired. He told me that during Prohibition, The group held their meetings at the Schweitzerhalle in Toledo, where there was a Bavarian dance group and all the 3.5% beer they could drink.
And finally, the prohibition ended. Then we thought, well, my gosh, we should have something in Ann Arbor.
Sure.
Then Schwab of Rhein had a 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
1938. No, it was, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't 38. Yeah.
Yeah, 1938. Then we had in Hanselman's Grove, out off Waters Road, we cleared off a space in the woods and celebrated the Schwabish 50th anniversary out there. Then we looked around for a place of our own, and we looked around 2 or 3 years, then we found this place here. And we have to give Adolf Feder credit for that, because he really found it.
Well, when did you move out here, or when did you
well,
first?
Well, we made a down payment on it, on, I guess, in December 38, in 1938. And in July 1939, we had our first German picnic out here. We opened it to the public.
Did you have a big crowd? Do you remember that?
Yes, a good attendance at that time. But we didn't have hardly anything. We didn't have any well yet. Well, we had one road to get in. And I guess you were here when we built that little bridge down there.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The German festival has continued as an annual celebration from that day to this. And this year's byword for the festivities was Gemütlichkeit. I asked all three gentlemen what the word meant to them.
I define it as a simple, good time.
Just a simple, good time?
Right. Now, you can leave the simple off, but it's a good time. That is my interpretation of Gemütlichkeit. Now, you can read a lot more into it, but it comes down, if you, everybody has a good time, you have Gemütlichkeit.
Okay. How about you?
Well, yes, it's just a nice social get-together and having fun and enjoying whatever you're doing, mostly drinking, I mean. Goes with it.
It's all right when you're among friends, I guess. How about you?
Well, I really call Gemütlichkeit more the Bavarian style, when you sit on a table and have a sitter or a Zugharmonika going and singing along and drinking beer at the same time and have a good time with each other, and that's what I call Gemütlichkeit.
And that's what the German festival is all about. It's food, friends, singing, dancing. Just a generally good time where everybody has fun. Even the youngsters have a chance to be involved in their German heritage. Here, some of the children dance the old German dances in authentic German dress. One of the most important celebrations that takes place in almost every American home is Christmas. And the Germans really know how to celebrate it. Edith and Paul Kempf, whose families were both among the original German settlers, described Christmas as they remembered it when they were youngsters.
And I think the Germans probably made more of it. At least in my family, that was the greatest day of the year. And it was sort of a ceremony. Of course, with my mother, who was taught singing. She was a music teacher. And father being piano and organ, music was the predominating characteristic of the family. And the affair usually took place in a family way on Christmas Eve. And of course, there was a tree with a garden, which my mother made out of old crates and then covered up with rugs. And then they would go out to the woods and bring in moss, and they would put the moss over the rugs. And they would have a looking glass in the middle there for representing a lake, and a little bit of a canoe on the lake, and so forth. It went right across the end of the room. And then, of course, the presents, which were for my sister and myself. Now, my sister was 12 years older than myself, but we were kids at that time, and presents would be placed around this garden. Now, we weren't allowed in there all day long. There was busy activity there. My grandmother and mother in the kitchen making springali and lepkuchen and what have you. And we could sneak one out the back door if we were quick. But on the other hand, the place was kept all curtained off. And we would sit down to dinner that evening. It was always the same. The kids, myself and my sister, were primarily anxious to get inside of that curtain. That was the thing that interested us most. However, we didn't get in there until after dinner was over, when father or mother, whichever one happened to be closest to the piano, sat down and they played Holy Night, Silent Night, and several other Christmas carols, which we had to stand in there and sing all the time, recognizing the fact that we wanted to be out in the other room and see what we got for Christmas. So after that was over, father went out and he would open the curtain, and it was a free-for-all at that point. And it was just a wonderful time.
Many of my relatives were members of Bethlehem, so I heard what went on there. The big Bethlehem congregation and the big Zion congregation had hundreds and hundreds of children in their Sunday school. There wasn't anybody with a German name in Ann Arbor who didn't go to Sunday school, one of those two churches. And that meant practicing for weeks and weeks before Christmas Eve for the big celebration on Christmas Eve, which meant being there promptly at 6 o'clock and marching two by two down the aisle, which looked very long. It really wasn't so long, but to a child it did. And everyone reciting or taking part in a chorus. And I never saw the Christmas tree at Bethlehem, but I'm told it was huge. At Zion, there was a Christmas tree that must have been 25 feet high. Huge, just huge, all beautifully decorated. And that was Christmas Eve for people of German descent. The Sunday school celebration, and then home. And then whatever way people wish to celebrate. But all the Ann Arbor people of German descent baked Lebkuchen, Springli, Pfeffernis, Esses, all those things were baked in the kitchens west of Main Street and south of Huron Street. I think you could smell the Lebkuchen baking all around. I have to tell one little thing about Springerlies. That's really a South German cookie made in a mold that we call a modal. And many of the people had brought their models with them. I have some right here. All hand carved, brought them from the old country with them, which was extremely important. You made the Springleys out of your own models and had the same pictures every year, you see. Well, that was important. And going into the country long before Christmas to gather hickory nuts for hickory nut drops, without trespassing on any farmer's land, because there were many hickory nut trees all around Washtenaw County. You could just pick them up, and then you'd have to spend many Sunday afternoons, at least I did, for weeks before Christmas picking up hickory nuts, picking the nuts out, you know, the nut meats out.
Professor War II loved the German community on the west side of town, what he still calls the old Second Ward. Remembering a time when there was still a great deal of tradition and strong national and family ties, Professor War sums up the essence of the old German spirit.
I don't know. I'm an old man, I know now, but I go back to my boyhood so often in my thoughts, and I always think of the Second Ward as one of the loveliest places in Ann Arbor. That's the old Second Ward, out there west of Main Street. It was clean. Those Germans had lovely little homes and beautiful homes, beautiful yards, beautiful gardens, fruit trees. They were honest. They were modest. They took care of their work. They worked hard. And the church was still the center.
As with the Germans, the church is a central place for the Greek community. Mr. Frank Kokonakis and his sister, Mrs. Helen Kokalis, have lived in Ann Arbor for over 60 years. I spoke with them about the building of the St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church.
When was it? 1936.
Tell us during
the Depression.
Tell them
how
they collect the money to build it.
During the Depression, we had to go out, and the women, they give some kind of play, you know, to collect the money to put it on the church.
I see.
And then we used to hire ourselves. Somebody put $5, some $10, you know, so we can. We didn't have much money. Nobody has no money. We used to go out sometimes to sell a ticket for 25 cents, and the guy says, you come back again for tickets? Because 25 cents was a lot of money those days.
We used to give
depression, big depression.
Dinners for dollar.
Dinners for dollar, you know, in order to make a few extra dollars to support the church. Finally, we finished it in 1937. And
mostly, you know, Charlie Prakatis.
And
he was the head.
Poulos and Dames and Chris Bilakos and Chris Kokonakis, Frank Kokonakis, Paul Kokonakis, and a few other people here in Ann Arbor, they support the church.
Well, was this when you had your first full-time priest then?
We had first-time priest. He came from...
From Chios.
From the island. No, at first, before we make the church, we used to go, we have halls. We used to go here and there.
I see.
But after we met the church, we had a priest come in from the island of Chios. And we didn't pay him very much money because the community didn't have much money to
pay.
You only
pay $75 a month. That's all he charged.
But the community is poor. But after a while, everything began going better. And
have you been active in the church, Mrs. Kukulis?
Very much.
I guess before the church, weren't you saying a little earlier you had to go to Detroit?
Yes. We went to Detroit to the holidays and to baptize our children. You know, my two children, they were baptized in Detroit. They're evangelismos, they call them, you know.
When I got married, we had to bring the priest from Detroit here to Ann Arbor to marry
me. He got married right in the house.
We didn't have no halls. We didn't have things like that. The priest came in.
We were happy. Cook right there and everybody eat right there.
State and Packard, the streetcar used to come from Detroit, and I was living on Hill Street then. Hill and State, between Hill and State and Packard, on those houses there. That's where I got married.
Within the last several years, the Greek community has established an annual Greek festival, much like the one given by the Schwabenverein in the German park. Unlike the German festival, however, the Greek festival is a church-related activity. Mr. Kokonakis and Mrs. Kokalis explained how the Greek festival originated.
We had one minister, a young minister, and he says we'll have to start something, he says, so we can make
Father
money.
Father Anestis, you ever hear him?
Yes.
Yeah, and he was the one who started.
And he says we'll do this, so he ran out and talked to all the women. He says, you got to come to the church and make up this and make that, make that. And
make over 50,000 pieces of sweets the first year.
So they made very good success the first year. The second year they made more success. And then they begin to have the ethnic festival on Main Street.
Right.
One Jewish rabbi and our minister, they got together an idea and they made that the festival. Mm-hmm. And then they keep on going. They had one this year too also.
Yes, the ethnic festival.
Yes, and they made pretty good.
The first of all, our ladies, we used to give a bake sale. That's how we started. So and, that brought the festival along, you know. Says we give dinner with that and it'll be much better and everything else, you know.
The Greek festival is held each summer at the St. Nicholas Church. The title of this year's festival was Yasu, which means health to you. For at least a month before the festival, the Greek ladies in and around Ann Arbor bake sweets to sell of Greek origin, and they sell them at their bake sale. This year, along with the bake sale, they served dinner, which included souvlaki. Plus, they had two bars, one at each end of the tent. And for entertainment, professional Greek dancers and singers from Detroit. But perhaps better than professional entertainment was that dancing that was done by the Greek children, who, like the German children, perform in their native costumes. Greek family to come to Ann Arbor was the Precates family. The Precates brothers arrived around the turn of the century and eventually owned the Sugar Bowl restaurant on Main Street. Among the many interesting anecdotes Mr. Anthony Precates recounted for me about Ann Arbor history was one that happened in the Sugar Bowl during the Depression.
One Saturday afternoon, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, young lady, probably around 25, nice dark hair and beautiful looking lady, and had it with a little child, girl. The girl was about, probably, I would say, not quite 2 years old. She sat in one of the booths in the lower parlor. So
the lower part of the restaurant.
Yeah, there's the lower parlor and upper parlor, you see. And the girl went away to her and says, I want a bowl of hot water. So the girl come up to me and says, well, I charge you that. I says, you deliver that. I says, don't and I'll tell you what you do. But there was place I can stay and I can watch what's going on the whole place without detecting me, you see. So I saw them days, we used to have a bowl of those oyster crackers and ketchup, mustard, sugar, salt and pepper. It was on them. And as I watched there, she took the ketchup and put some ketchup in the soup and then took some crackers and put in then a little salt and pepper and start feeding the child.
Oh my.
I says, you know, that kind of touched me up. I says, all right. I called the girl, come here. I says, go back, select, order hot sandwich with all the treatments, and take coffee, and take a glass of milk and some ice cream for the child and take it down the table to this lady. So she did. When she looked at her, she says, I didn't order that, you know, because almost tears in her eyes, you know, and it kind of touched me. So I kind of watched it. And she said, I only got a dime. I said, don't worry about it. It's everything taken care of, son. She got through, she come up to me and to thank me. He says, for what? He says, for thank me. Oh, he says, don't worry about it. He says, where are you from? He says, I'm from north. Where are you going? He says, I have a sister in Detroit, and I want to go to her. And that time we had streetcars running, you know, from Detroit up to Chicago. So the fare, if I can recall, was about 35 cents that time, 35 cents to go to Detroit. So I says, you know, there's depot little ways down here. I give her a dollar. I don't want to say this, you know, I give her a dollar. I says, you go in. He says, so she thanked me for. But you know, about 12 years later, she come in one Saturday afternoon in the store and says, do you remember me? I said, my dear lady, I said, thousand millions. She says, your face some kind, but do you remember that lady who come with a little girl? And she had a beautiful little girl. She wasn't very tall, but, oh, yes. I says, that's my daughter. I says, what are you doing here? I says, I come in to enroll my daughter. She wants to go to school and become teacher. Wonderful. I says, I think her name was Marianne. Marianne, I remember.
That's a delight.
I said, look, honey, I says, whenever you want anything, I said, don't be ashamed to come down here and help. Whenever you're downtown, stop in. You know, that kind of policeman, I says, 4 years later, she graduated. Isn't that something? I can tell so many things that happened, you know, that.
Mr. Preketty speaks for both the Greek and the German communities when he says that there are many similar stories that could be told. We have just given you a glimpse of Ann Arbor's two largest ethnic groups, the Germans and the Greeks, who despite entirely different backgrounds, comprise tightly knit, proud, and energetic communities, which have strongly influenced the Ann Arbor we know today. Until next time, auf Wiedersehen. Or, as the Greeks would say, Gerida.